It is Crunch Time, Monday, March 21st edition here on your hometown radio station, Eagle Country 99.3 and at EagleCountryOnline.com. I am your host, Double T Travis there, and a big thank you to our great friends and sponsors at Ortho Cincy Orthopedics and Sports Medicine for their continued support of this show. Ortho Cincy is the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries. You can go online to schedule your next appointment or learn more at OrthoCincy.com. That's OrthoCincy.com. And we will be welcoming on Dr. Ron Auer next week to learn a little bit more about what he does at Ortho Cincy, why you should use their services, and so forth and so on. Hopefully we'll get into a little sports talk with Dr. Auer as well. That, of course, is what we are here to do each and every Monday from 6 to 6:30, running down all the latest in hometown sports. And it certainly is a fun time of the year to be a sports fan on the high school landscape. You got the end of the boys basketball season coming this weekend with the state title games. We're moving into spring sports. And then on the collegiate and pro level, you got the NCAA tournaments, men and women heating up. The MLS soccer season is underway. Baseball right around the corner. You got NFL free agency if you're a big golf fan. The Masters is right around the corner as well. So this is a really, really fun time of the year to be a sports fan. I know there's racing enthusiasts and all of that stuff is going on right now in this time of the year. So let's get into our hometown headlines and talk a little high school sports to start out the show tonight. I did mention that the boys basketball state tournament is still ongoing here in the Hoosier State, and we got to congratulate the Jacksonville Eagles on a tremendous season as they competed at the semi-state on Saturday at Seymour, taking on number 2 North Davies in the 1A tournament. Unfortunately for Jacksonville, North Davies would win that game 60-47 to advance to the state title game. They will take on number 11 Lafayette Central Catholic, who knocked off number 1 Gary 21st Century in overtime on Saturday. So a tremendous season from Jacksonville. They're going to finish 22-6. They were number 10 in 1A entering the state tournament. And this is the most wins they've had in a season since David Bradshaw led the Eagles to the state championship back in 2008-2009. They went 25-2 that year and actually won 18 games in a row to finish the season, including a 6-point win over North Davies in the semi-state that year. So perhaps North Davies kind of returning the favor 13 years after that fact, and they'll have a chance to go win the state championship this coming Saturday in downtown Indianapolis. But this Jacksonville team was really on a similar path to the one in 08-09 as they had won 12 games in a row getting to the semi-state on Saturday. Clint Bowman has done a really nice job with this team over his first two seasons as head coach, going 37-14. And that has been because, he's had a lot of really good players as well. If you talk to any area coach around here, they will always firstly give the credit to having great players, and Wyatt Day and Caleb Simon have been the dynamic duo for the Eagles this year. Wyatt Day, 20 points in the semi-state game to lead his team. That was right on his average. However, for fellow senior Caleb Simon, it wasn't his day there at the semi-state. Only had 7 points, averaging closer to 18 points per game. But those two guys in particular have been the backbone of this team with their other fellow seniors on this team, Justin Swinney, Ryan Wilson, and Nathan Hoffman, all those guys playing key roles in winning those 22 games and getting to the semi-state. So they will certainly be missed going into next year. You see this a lot in high school basketball when you have really, really good senior classes. Really, really good things can happen. You take a look at the Lawrenceburg Tigers, another team that got out of the sectional and advanced on in the state tournament, made it to the regional behind 4 really, really solid senior players that played a lot of varsity basketball. So I do see some similarities between those two teams. Obviously, Jacksonville able to make it a little bit further in the tournament. But now looking forward to next season when you have those 5 seniors gone by the wayside, moving on to college. I'm sure Day and Simon have a chance to play at the next level as those other 3 guys, as I mentioned, Swinney, Wilson, and Hoffman, they may get some looks at colleges as well, but key contributors coming back next year. Devin Grieshop, who had a nice game in the semi-state, was also in double figures, 6-foot forward. They can shoot it a little bit, and Mac Dickman, 6'5 forward, who will provide a little size. Both of those young men averaged around 7 points per game this year. You'll see that jump next year as they'll be 2 of the featured scorers, you would think, in this offense with Coach Bowman there. kind of reloading this team. One thing we know about Jacksonville basketball, both on the boys and girls side, this is something they live for out there in Osgood. Those folks love their basketball and typically have good teams both on the boys and girls side, as they've both won state championships within the last 13 years. So can't speak highly enough about the programs out there at Jacksonville High School. Another congratulations to the Eagles on a phenomenal run to the semi-state. I'm sure it won't be their last appearance on a stage like that. While we're on the topic of the boys basketball state tournament and state championship games to be played this Saturday, the 1954 Milan Indians state championship team is one that means a lot to a lot of people in this area, particularly in Milan, but across southeastern Indiana as a whole. And the reason I bring up this team is because, well, they're going to be recognized once again with a public dedication ceremony set for this Saturday, March 26th. It's going to happen at the Milan 54 Hoosiers Museum on West Carr Street there in Milan. The program expected to begin at noontime, and this is all going to be about a state historical marker commemorating that 1954 Milan Indian State championship team, which is going to be placed outside of that Milan 54 Hoosiers Museum, and it will read Milan Miracle, because we all know the story. It was a miracle for Milan to go on and win the state championship, knocking off Muncie Central 32-30 in that state title game. Muncie Central, a school that was 10 times the size of Milan at the time, a historic moment that inspired the movie Hoosiers that we've all seen probably more times than we'd like to admit. I'll admit it, I've seen it countless times, and I love it each and every time that I watch it. But anyways, this is a big moment for not only that Milan state championship team, but the Milan 54 Hoosiers Museum, and a lot of folks that care very much about that team and the history of this team. Seeing this historical marker be put in place, the Indiana Historical Bureau has been marking Indiana history for over 100 years. Over 700 markers have been installed since 1946, and this will be the 10th said historical marker to be placed in Ripley County, and this is going to be a big to-do. Again, this Saturday, March 26th, the public is invited to attend the dedication, and they're going to have some fun stuff going on at the Milan 54 Museum. I do believe it is going to be open at no charge to the public to go in and check out everything. They're going to be having a little reception there following the dedication, so should be a good time out in Milan. Again, recognizing one of the great high school basketball teams in the state of Indiana, and really maybe the one of the best sports stories that could ever be told in any sport, not only in Indiana, but just across the world. That Milan team's going to live forever, and that's partially because of things like the Milan 54 Hoosiers Museum and, of course, the movie Hoosiers that keeps reminding people of just how great a moment that was, and that historical marker will help do that as well. So pretty cool stuff there. Hope to see a big crowd out at that dedication at noontime this Saturday. And while we're talking about events, the Lawrenceburg High School Sports Social is coming up on Tuesday, May 31st at Agner Hall, and legendary sports broadcaster Marty Brenneman will be the featured speaker. He'll be talking about his time calling games for the Cincinnati Reds and all the great stories throughout his lengthy career. Attendees are going to have an opportunity to meet Marty, take a photo, and everyone that attends will get a signed baseball from Mr. Brenneman himself. Cost is $100. There's only 250 tickets to be sold. 21 and older event, and all proceeds will benefit student athletes at Lawrenceburg High School. So more info at EagleCountryOnline.com. Got some more high school hoops to talk about before we move into some other happenings here in Eagle Country. You're listening to Crunch Time, presented by Ortho Cincy Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries. Dr. Ron Auer, Dr. Brian Whistle, and Dr. Roman Trimba, conveniently located here in Lawrenceburg, so it's easy to find the orthopedic specialist you need, orthocincy.com. Want to say congratulations to a couple of young ladies from East Central High School who have been named Indiana All-Stars. Now, last Tuesday, Hope Fox, senior guard, was named to the Indiana All-Star team. The first time in school history an East Central Trojans basketball player has been named an Indiana All-Star. And then just a few days later, junior Josie Trable was named to the Indiana Junior All-Stars, another first in program history. I want to start with Hope Fox, as that announcement came first last week again on Tuesday, so it was a day after this program. That's why we have it on for you this week. But what a career she has put together at East Central. Three-time sectional champion. Three-time EIAC conference champ, three-time IBCA All-State selection, and a three-time IBCA Top 100 selection. And she was first team All-State as a senior this year, also an academic All-State first team honoree, EIAC All-Conference, and the team defensive MVP. She's also been selected to play in the HBCA All-Star Classic on April 3rd, so it's going to be a busy spring and summer for Hope Fox as she's getting ready to transition into being a college basketball player at Southern Connecticut State University. But she's going to leave East Central with some records: most made three-point baskets, three-point field goal percentage, and free throw percentage. But it's not just her scoring that makes her stand out as a player. Obviously a very gifted shooter, good ball handler, averaged 14 points per game this year, 6.3 rebounds as a guard, absolutely phenomenal. 3.5 assists, so the playmaking ability is there, and then almost 3 steals per game. She is one of the better defenders I've seen, an agitator, on-ball defender. She can get in the passing lanes, obviously active hands, deflections all the time, steals leading to easy baskets. So Hope Fox has been a big part of those 3 straight sectional championships and 3 straight conference titles for the East Central Lady Trojans, and she is going to be joined by a heck of a team on this Indiana All-Star team, as you would imagine. These are the best players in the state on this team: Miss Basketball and UConn commit Ayanna Patterson from Homestead. You got 2 Michigan commits in Kate Clark from Carmel and Alyssa Crockett from Westfield. Maryland commit Myla Reynolds from South Bend, Washington, and Purdue commit Lily Stoddard from Crown Point. So a bunch of Big Ten recruits and one young lady in Patterson who's going to go to the best program there is for women's basketball in UConn. So a lot of D1 talent on this Indiana All-Star team. You sprinkle in players like Hope Fox, who can do a little bit of everything. I think she's going to stand to get some nice open shots playing with the talent level that she's going to be playing with during this Indiana-Kentucky All-Star game. So I look for her to make a nice impact in this game. And this is a meaningful game for the All-Stars from Indiana and Kentucky. It's bragging rights, right? 2 states that love their basketball, rich in tradition. The Indiana senior girls do lead the series over Kentucky 51-39, so they'll want to keep adding wins in that column. And they will play 2 games. Before they get to those 2 games, though, there will be the Indiana junior-senior exhibition game set for June 8th. That'll be at a site to be announced, and we got more on that coming up in a second. First game against Kentucky will be June 10th down at the Owensboro Sports Center, and then the final game against Kentucky will take place on June 11th at Southport Fieldhouse. The reason they're playing there is because Gainbridge Fieldhouse in downtown Indianapolis, home of the Pacers, will be unavailable due to the third phase of renovations that will be occurring there during June. But obviously this is going to be a fantastic opportunity for Hope Fox to get out there and mix it up with some of the best players in the region, Indiana and Kentucky, as again she is on her way to play college basketball. So this is going to be another great learning experience for her, playing against some top talent as well as she gets herself ready for the next level. But just an awesome accomplishment, and couldn't happen to a nicer young lady. We got a chance to speak with her a couple times here on Crunch Time after some of their sectional championship wins. Just seems like she's got a really good head on her shoulders, and a fantastic athlete and a great student as well. So we wish Hope Fox the best of luck as she goes off to the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star game, and certainly hoping for her to do some big things at Southern Connecticut State University. One thing I want to add about this Indiana-Kentucky All-Star game is Hope Fox is going to have the opportunity to once again be coached by Kevin Moore, who was selected to the Indiana All-Stars coaching staff last month. And this is something that he's really dreamed about for a long time. Got a chance to catch up with Coach after he was named to the team. Without reading Coach's full statement, he said, "Growing up, used to attend the Indiana versus Kentucky All-Star games, and now being able to say that he's coached in the game, that's going to be a pretty cool feeling. I'm sure it's also going to be a pretty cool feeling knowing that he has the opportunity to coach Hope Fox a little bit more. When we talked to Coach Moore after their sectional championship win over Columbus East, he came up on the broadcast and mentioned Hope as one of those players that he saw play at a really young age, third or fourth grade, and said, man, I can't wait to coach her at the varsity level, because that was a player that he saw something in, and obviously he was right in seeing something in her with all the accomplishments that she has obtained. So having the opportunity to coach her at the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star Game, I'm sure that's going to make it extra special for Coach and should make it extra special for Hope as well. Coach Moore, I assume, is very, very proud of his junior star, Josie Trable, as well, as she has been selected to the Indiana Junior All-Star Team. 18 players were selected to that team last Friday, and they have divided all of those players into three separate teams. You have the core group, red group, and blue group. Now, what that means is the girls' core group will play two games. The girls' reds group will play one game against the Kentucky Juniors, and the blue group will play one game against the Indiana Seniors. Part of me was hoping that Josie Trable would be in the blue group playing against the Indiana Seniors, because she and Hope Fox could be in the same game together playing as adversaries. Would have been kind of cool to see them go head-to-head, but instead, Trable is on the red group. They will play against the Kentucky Juniors on June 5th. And just one note about the roster, there is only 6 girls on the red group, which means they're all going to get ample playing time in this game against the juniors. But Josie Trable and Sage Stahl will be teammates. Now, if you are familiar with what East Central did this year, I just mentioned they played Columbus East in the championship game of the sectional. Sage Stahl was one of those players that Josie went up against. Both are forwards that averaged about 18 points per game this season, can kind of do a little bit of everything. I think it's going to be awesome to see these two young ladies playing on the same team, and they will certainly be able to do a ton of damage together, I assume. And then having the chance to see them go head-to-head again next year, not only in the regular season, we presume, but maybe in the sectional again. That's going to be fun as well. So congratulations to Josie Trable for making the junior all-star team. It has certainly been an awesome, awesome junior year for her. East Central's first ever junior all-star, by the way, but a record-breaking season for Josie. Set the school record for career points with 1,353. Single season records for points, 478, and field goals made with 191. A couple of single game records, the 15 field goals, 36 points that she had in the sectional title game. That was an impressive performance, maybe one of the more impressive performances individually I've seen since I've started broadcasting here about 6 or 7 years ago. But an awesome year overall, almost 18 points per game, as I alluded to, 7 rebounds, almost 3 assists, and 2.5 steals per game. She was honored by being part of the IBCA Supreme 15 Underclass All-State, so one of the top 15 underclass players in the state. First team All-State selection, EIAC All-Conference, EIAC MVP, and the All-Regional team, as she had back-to-back 30-point double-doubles in the sectional final game and the first round of the regional. But she's going to have an opportunity to go play against the Kentucky Juniors at Bedford North Lawrence High School. That'll be on Sunday, June 5th, and we have more details over at EagleCountryOnline.com. All right, let's switch gears here and talk a little wrestling. Want to talk about Mason Paris, senior at Michigan, was seeded 7th as a heavyweight at the NCAA tournament. He ended up finishing 5th after knocking off Northwestern's Lucas Davidson in that 5th place bout. That was Paris's second straight top 5 NCAA finish and 3rd All-American honor. So absolutely awesome career at the University of Michigan. He was the runner-up in the heavyweight division last year, finishing 5th this year, as Gable Steveson went on to win it for the second consecutive year. And both of those individuals, both Gable and Mason, I guess now turn their focus to the WWE, as they were both a part of that NIL Next in Line program for the WWE, as they are looking for their next stars. So as far as we know, Mason Paris is going to be heading down to Orlando, Florida, to the WWE Performance Center to potentially start a WWE career, maybe get offered a contract if they see enough in him as a future star in that business. But again, 3 state championships as a high schooler at Lawrenceburg, from his sophomore to senior season, winning those consecutively, goes on to the University of Michigan, and then becomes a 3-time All-American. Absolutely phenomenal career, phenomenal young man, and big things ahead for him no matter what he chooses to do, whether that's going to be with the WWE or anything else that might pop up. He just seems like he's one of those kids that's going to succeed at whatever it is that he does. So I did want to say congratulations to Mason on a fantastic career at the University of Michigan. Now, another young wrestler here in the area hopes to aspire to be on that level one day, and that is an Aurora Elementary School 4th grader who is starting to make a name for himself on the mat, Jace Largent, winning the 2022 ISWA Folk Style State Tournament at Warren Central High School back on March 12th and 13th. He won and actually dominated the 10U 71-pound tournament, mowed down all 5 of his opponents. The first couple of rounds won by fall, 46 seconds and then 13 seconds to get to the quarterfinals. Won there by decision 6-0, a semifinal win by decision 4-0, and then a major decision win 13-1 in the finals. So look out for Jace Largent, perhaps a future South Dearborn Knight who is already tearing it up on the wrestling mat as a 4th grader. You can read a little bit more about his recent successes over at EagleCountryOnline.com. You'll also find more information on the EIAC All-Conference teams for winter sports. You're listening to Crunch Time, presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries, OrthoSensi.com. I am your host, Double T Travis, there. Couple of quick thoughts on the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments. The men down to the Sweet 16. I think the big story has been St. Peter's, the 15 seed, knocking off Kentucky and Murray State to get to the final 16, where they'll take on 3-seeded Purdue. So again, this St. Peter's team has a chance to play against a team that has some fans here in the region. So a lot of people are becoming familiar with St. Peter's, as they are this year's Cinderella darling. Beating Kentucky was a big shock, not only because it was a 2-15 matchup, but a lot of folks thought Kentucky had the talent to get to the Final Four. And I still think they had the talent to get to the Final Four. They just weren't playing their best basketball and got beat by the better team on that given night. That's a hard pill to swallow still for UK fans, but that's the fact of the matter, at least in my opinion. UK, they'll be fine. They're going to bring back a lot of their kids next year, and they'll be right back in a similar situation to try to make a run in the NCAA tournament. I look at Duke this year. They're in the one region that still has all 4 top seeds playing, that being Gonzaga versus Arkansas, and then Duke will take on Texas Tech. Duke is my sentimental favorite because it is Mike Krzyzewski's final year as the head coach there. I think he's one of the all-time greats to do it, not only on the college basketball level, but just in general. So it would be cool to see him ride off into the sunset with one more national title. I know there's a lot of UK fans that are saying some bad things about me right now in their car or wherever they're listening to the program. I'm sorry to say it. I'm looking at it from a standpoint of a cool sports story, and I think it would be one if Duke is able to win it. I personally am rooting for Gonzaga above anybody else, though, because they've lost in the title game twice in the last 4 years. I think Mark Few is fantastic. I hate that they get a bad rap because of the conference they play in. They are a very, very good basketball team, the top overall seed for a reason, and I would like them to win the national championship, just despite all those people that think they're not as good as they are because of the conference they play in. Because let's face the facts here. Gonzaga has made runs each and every year, getting to the Sweet 16 level, Elite 8, Final Four, National Championship game. You don't get to that level every single year, or get to those levels every single year, without having a really, really great program. So rooting for the Zags to show everybody that they can be national champions, and they certainly can. They have the talent for it. Looking at the Big Ten, I mentioned Purdue. Michigan is still alive as a number 11 seed. The Big Ten has had their struggles in the NCAA tournament, as a Big Ten team has not won the championship since, I believe, the 2001 season, with Michigan State cutting down the nets. So the Big Ten, arguably year in, year out, especially in recent memory, has been one of the best conferences in college basketball. But being the best conference doesn't always translate into having a conference champion. Two of their better schools got knocked off last night, with Wisconsin losing to 11 seed Iowa State. Houston knocked off Illinois, who a lot of people thought had a Final Four caliber team. So I think the wait's going to go on for the Big Ten. I don't see Michigan getting past Villanova, so I think they'll be out after their next game. I do think Purdue will beat St. Peter's. They'll match up with either North Carolina or UCLA in the Elite Eight, and quite frankly, that'll be a crapshoot there. So I think Purdue's got a decent shot at making a run into the Final Four. They're going to have to match up with one of those top four seeds from the Gonzaga-Duke region. So the road will get progressively tougher for them as they move along, but if you're wanting the Big Ten to win a national championship, I think you got to get on the Boilermaker bandwagon as of right now. Talked an awful lot about basketball this evening, which is not a bad thing, but I do want to get a little football talk in as the Cincinnati Bengals have been very, very active in free agency this offseason, and in particular in the last couple of weeks. Last week, we were talking about Ted Karras and Alex Kappa signing. Kappa coming over from Tampa Bay. Karras, former New England Patriot. Karras is going to play center. Kappa is going to play right guard. Bengals still had another hole to fill, a big hole to fill at right tackle. They weren't expected to bring back Riley Reiff, who was injured at the end of last season. Isaiah Prince is more of a depth guy, backup, who got thrust into a starting role down the stretch. So the Dallas Cowboys end up releasing Lael Collins, a 28-year-old right tackle who has been an all-pro type player, has suffered through some injuries and had a suspension over the last couple of years, but a very, very gifted right tackle, very good at what he does, both as a pass blocker and a run blocker, former LSU player as well, and they had him in basically all weekend, recruiting him to Cincinnati. Finally, a deal gets done yesterday, 3 years, $30 million for Lael Collins, as he is the quote-unquote new bodyguard for Joe Burrow. That's what the report was that he texted to Joe after Joe asked if he had got a deal done. And I thought this was really cool, too, kind of reading into this report about Collins signing with the Bengals, the missing piece on the offensive line. Joe Burrow actually had the two new signings in Karras and Kappa and their new tight end Hayden Hurst over to his house on Friday. Collins was there as well, as that was kind of the final recruiting pitch, as Joe Burrow has become a little bit of a closer for this team and has himself a new right tackle. And on paper, this line looks much improved. You got Jonah Williams at left tackle as it is currently slated. Jackson Carman, second-year player, would likely be the left guard. There will be some competition there before it's all said and done. Ted Karras at center, Alex Kappa at right guard, and Lael Collins at right tackle. Much, much improved. Joe Burrow's got to have a big smile on his face. Joe Mixon likely has a big smile on his face. And there was some great Twitter reaction from some of the players who are very, very happy about these signings. And I think the Hayden Hurst tight end signing was pretty good. Eli Apple's back in the fold on a one-year deal at cornerback. Of course, Jesse Bates got the franchise tag. B.J. Hill's back at defensive tackle, and I think the Bengals will look to add a couple more free agents before they head into the draft, but they have certainly opened up their options with the draft in maybe getting the best player available with the 31st pick in the first round, or they could continue to bolster the offensive line and get some depth there and or somebody that compete for the left guard starting spot with Jackson Carman and company. So very happy to be a Bengals fan today, and very happy that they stuck to their word and got Joe Burrow some protection this offseason. So no Bengals fans are happy about Collins coming in, the rest of the offensive line signings. The Indianapolis Colts fan base, they've been waiting for some news, especially after they traded Carson Wentz to the Washington Commanders, and that news has come in today as 36-year-old Matt Ryan has been traded from the Falcons to the Indianapolis Colts for a third-round pick in this upcoming draft. Matt Ryan has had a really great 14 years in Atlanta. He's thrown for at least 4,000 yards in every season from 2011 until last season. He fell just under that mark. It turned out pretty good the last time Colts brought in an aging quarterback in Phillip Rivers. He had a pretty good small run for the team. Matt Ryan has been very, very good for a long time, a pretty steady player. And even though he is older than Carson Wentz, I do see him as an upgrade at that position. If they can have him bridge the gap between a younger quarterback in the next couple of seasons, I think that's a big-time win for the Colts, and it does keep them in the conversation in the AFC South alongside the Tennessee Titans. to win that division this year. And winning the division is going to be the route to go if you are an AFC team, because the AFC looks loaded on paper with all of the recent moves. The AFC North looks strong from top to bottom. The AFC West looks strong from top to bottom. You got the Bills, who are very good in the East, followed up by the Patriots, who were a playoff team last year. You had the Dolphins, who won about 7 games in a row at the end of last season. So right now, there's only about 3 or 4 teams in the AFC that you can, I guess, completely take out of the mix based on the offseason moves. So the Colts do well in getting an established starting quarterback to keep themselves well in the mix in the AFC. And I wanted to spend a minute or two on FC Cincinnati, but I'm running out of time, so I'll try to get my thoughts out quickly here. They did win their second consecutive match on Saturday, 3-1 at home against Inter Miami. Their last two wins have been against teams that I wouldn't consider very, very good, but FC Cincinnati hasn't been very, very good, and these aren't games that they have typically won in their first 3 seasons in the MLS. But under new head coach Pat Noonan, something is starting to change with this team. They're a lot more threatening going forward. They have found something with this formation they are playing now, with 3 center backs, 2 wing backs, 3 in the midfield, and 2 up top. Brandon Vazquez, young player, 23. He's scored 4 goals in the last 2 games. He is really emerging as a star, and you can just see that everything's a little different with this team. They possess the ball better. Like I said, more threatening going forward. They're scoring more goals, and that is helping out their defense, as well as they have not conceded as many times this year. New goalkeeper is helping with that as well. So they have shot up from the bottom of the barrel in the Eastern Conference to 8th in the conference, just a point off of a playoff spot through the first 4 games. Yes, it is early. A lot can change, but things are brightening up for the orange and blue. So I was happy to be at the stadium on Saturday and experience a win, so feeling pretty good here on this Monday evening. Couple that with the Bengals free agent moves, and things are going pretty good for the hometown teams. Now we just need to have the Reds follow suit, which we don't know when that is going to be. Don't mean to end on a negative note. This has been a positive show for the most part, so thank you for listening to your hometown radio station in general and tuning in to Crunch Time each and every Monday evening, presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Again, I'm your host, Double T Travis there. Thank you for listening to another edition of Crunch Time.